KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queenie Kim in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we'll discuss a transportation plan that could raise Bay Area bridge tolls by as much as $3 in order to expand the BART train fleet and extend Caltrain into downtown San Francisco, among other projects. If signed by California Governor Jerry Brown, the plan will go before voters next year. But first, we're going to get an update and local reaction to the devastating 7.1 magnitude earthquake in Mexico City yesterday. More than 200 people are dead, including at least 30 children. That's next after the news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queenie Kim in for Michael Krasny. In this hour, we'll discuss a $4.4 billion Bay Area transportation bill that passed both houses and is awaiting Governor Jerry Brown's signature. But first, we're going to get an update on yesterday's 7.1 magnitude earthquake in Mexico City. The quake came a little more than a week after the most powerful earthquake in a century, an 8.1 earthquake, struck off Mexico's southern Pacific coast, killing at least 225 people. And it came on the 32nd anniversary to the day of the 1985 earthquake that killed 10,000 people. As of now, more than 200 people are dead, including at least 30 children. And we've got Rodrigo Cervantes. He's the bureau chief in Mexico City of KJZZ. That's an affiliate of ours in Phoenix, Arizona, and he's on the line right now. Hey, Rodrigo.
Hey, how are you? Good morning.
Good. How are you doing?
I think I'm still decompressing after a very exhausting and intense day of covering until 6 a.m., but things are good, fortunately.
Yeah. Where were you during the earthquake when it struck?
Well, I was actually working in a sixth-floor building in the south of Mexico City, which is one of the areas that were most affected by the earthquake. Fortunately for me and for those who were in this building, it has a hydraulic system that allows the building to stay okay, but it also makes it shake a lot. So it was a little disturbing, the movement, seeing the people running to the street with fear, with the paranoia that was brought from the 1985 earthquake that you were mentioning as well. But of course, as soon as it happened, it was time to check what was going on with the rest of the city. Despite the power was off in most of the city, the cell phone lines were getting saturated quickly, and it was also very hard to communicate because of those reasons.
So I'm glad to hear that you fared well with your building. What's the scene like outside your building? I've been looking at my Twitter feed, and it looks like there were quite a few buildings that did collapse, sidings that fell off. What are you seeing?
Yes. In fact, the official numbers so far of damaged buildings in Mexico City are around 60. The number keeps moving. Just to do another comparison with the 1985 earthquakes, I think that this one, at least, it wasn't as impactful and it didn't have such a destruction as back in the day when tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people died. However, in the areas that you could see some affections, like in some pockets in the southern part of Mexico City, as well as in the typical areas that get damaged, which are like in the center of the city, you could see buildings completely destroyed, as well as others with important damages in their structures.
I saw on the news feed that there was a school that collapsed in Mexico City. Do you have an update on the recovery efforts there?
Yes, in fact, I was last night at that school. It's an private elementary school, Enrique Retzamo. That has been one of the main areas where people are trying to help. And the reason is because there's still a lot of people, including most of them children, who are trapped inside the building. So far, they've been able to rescue more than 20 people, but there are also a lot of bodies that are being rescued from the structure, and there's still hope that they can find some of the kids as well as some of the people that worked in the school.
It might be too early to do sort of this sort of analysis, but I'm curious, after the 1985 earthquake, you'd mentioned that some 10,000 people had been killed in that earthquake. I'm assuming there were a lot of measures put in place after the quake. I'm thinking mostly of things like construction requirements and regulations. Are you getting a sense of whether those policies and regulations worked or if they stood the test of time with this earthquake and the one before?
I think you're right in thinking that there might be a relation, and in fact some experts are connecting the learning that the city got from 1985 to the fact that there are not as many people affected from this earthquake. We know that, for instance, certain policies were implemented on how building structures should be built or constructed. There were also policies that were generated to create awareness among the population. Ironically, for instance, yesterday, just a couple of hours before the earthquake, there was
An earthquake drill, right? In celebration, or not celebration, but in commemoration of that 1985 earthquake.
Exactly, which are things that I think that for most of us, people from Mexico City that lived the 1985 earthquake, became a standard, just to make sure that your property is okay, what to do in case of this kind of emergencies. And I would also like to highlight the amazing attitude and effort from the entire community in the city. Just like in 1985, where a lot of citizens just like joined to try to rebuild the city and try to find people in the debris, that's exactly the same thing that I saw yesterday. I had the opportunity to chat, for instance, with a student who was on his way to the university. And as power started to fail in the city, he just decided to help and try to handle traffic. But you also see hundreds, if not thousands, of people carrying the debris, looking for survivors, bringing sandwiches, bringing water, bringing all sorts of help to try to improve the situation.
Rodrigo Cervantes, thanks so much for taking the time. I know you're really busy and probably very exhausted. Rodrigo Cervantes is the bureau chief of Mexico in Mexico City for KJZZ. That's an NPR affiliate in Phoenix, Arizona. Thanks so much for coming onto the show and sharing your story.
Thank you very much for having me.
We've got a local response here from our guest, Frida Javala Romero. You might recognize her name. She is a KQED news reporter. She's also grew up in Mexico, just outside Mexico City, and we've got her on the line. She's been in touch with friends and family there. Hey, Frida. Frida?
Yeah, hi.
Oh,
hi,
hey.
Frida.
How are you doing?
Can you hear me? Good. Okay.
Yeah, so you grew up outside of Mexico City?
Well, I actually grew up in the south of Mexico in a state called Tabasco. Mm-hmm. But like many other Mexicans, you know, we have a lot of ties to Mexico City. Mexico is a very centralized country, so everybody has, you know, connections with Mexico City and other cities around that area that were affected by the earthquake.
And have you been able to get in touch with any friends or family in Mexico City?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, my family is okay. I've been hearing from friends on social media, Facebook and Twitter, that they were able to, you know, get out of the building, survive the experience. There's still some unaccounted people. So I think for a lot of Mexican Americans like myself in the Bay Area and throughout the country, the last, you know, hours and night have been, you know, riddled with anxiety and sleeplessness because we're still trying to account for people that we know, relatives and friends that live in Mexico City and Puebla and other cities that were struck by the earthquake. So I think, you know, I'm hearing from people who are okay and were able to log into Facebook or some sort of communication to let others know.
Yeah, I've been seeing the feeds on Facebook of people checking in saying I'm all right.
Exactly. Yeah. So the stories are really harrowing, you know, like stories of, you know, moms just being able to grab their children and run out as fast as they could, or students, you know, trying to come out of whatever building they were at. So and then people dealing, struggling now with the aftermath of not having electricity, water, and of course trying to find their loved ones.
That was Frida Javala Romero. She's a KQED news reporter who grew up in Mexico and has a lot of friends and family still there. Frida, thanks so much for taking the time to share your story.
Thank you, Quina.
Well, we are going to turn to another subject right now that's a little farther afield, but we're going to talk about a $4.4 billion Bay Area transportation bill that passed both houses of state, the state legislature, and it's awaiting Governor Jerry Brown's signature. The bill would raise Bay Area bridge tolls by as much as $3, and revenue generated from that Senate Bill 595 would go towards a variety of projects, including expanding the fleet of BART trains, a Caltrain extension into downtown San Francisco, and a new inspector general position to oversee BART. If approved, the measure will have to go before Bay Area voters next year, and we're going to discuss the plan, and we're also going to hear about a new Metropolitan Transportation Commission report on the Bay Area's worst commutes, traffic, everybody's favorite subject, right? But right now, we have joining us for the hour, Dan Brecky. He's the editor and reporter of KQED News. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Quina.
And joining us by phone is one of the transportation plan's co-authors, California State Senator Mark McGuire. Welcome, Senator McGuire.
Hey, good morning, Quina.
I know you got only a couple minutes with us, so you wanted to start by telling us what's in the Senate bill and why do you feel like we need it?
Well, thank you so much for having me. Here's what we know. Over 600,000 vehicles travel on Bay Area highways every day. And tens of thousands of Bay Area residents take the public transit every day. And over the last several decades, the Bay Area's population has grown, but the highway infrastructure and public transit systems have not kept pace. Poll after poll show that Bay Area voters say that housing is at a crisis point and their commutes are mind-numbing. And there is finally some relief on the way, which is this Senate Bill 595, which is Regional Measure 3. It will go to the voters in 2018 with a very detailed expenditure plan focused on trying to remedy some of those worst commutes in regards to expanding highway infrastructure and expanding public transit across the Bay, from Silicon Valley up to the North Bay. And it will provide voters with a detailed expenditure plan so that they can see how their hard-earned toll dollars will be put to work, whether it's on our state highways or bridges or in BART or SMART. It will also have a Citizens Oversight Committee who will oversee the expenditure plan. As you said, for the first time ever, an inspector general would also be placed in for BART, overseeing BART operations.
So this bill has, I've got a list of like almost 36 things that these hiking the bridge toll, those funds will fund, everything from bike trails to, I guess, the Diridon Station in San Jose. I'm sure you've heard from your detractors that I don't think anybody would disagree that traffic is a problem here and we need to do something about our transportation infrastructure, but that this unfairly burdens folks from the East Bay who disproportionately take these bridges and so will pay a higher share of these tolls. And it's not necessarily going to the things that they're using, which is the bridge, but it would be going to bike trails, to BART, to expanding the Dumbarton Corridor. It's paying for a lot of things that are that don't necessarily benefit the people who are paying in to these tolls. Wondering what your response to that is.
I haven't heard from a lot of folks from the East Bay. I have heard from two representatives, the great congressman as well as an assemblyman in Contra Costa County, expressing some concern that Contra Costa County did not get their fair share in this potential Regional Measure 3. I think what's important is this. $350 million in projects will be advanced in Contra Costa County. They're also going to benefit from the $500 million to be able to expand BART cars that will be able to serve Contra Costa as well as throughout the Bay Area. As we know, BART is at capacity. It is at a crisis point, and we desperately need additional BART cars to be able to handle the pedestrian traffic and the commuters that are coming onto those trains every day. $300 million will be put into express lanes that will benefit Contra Costa. Contra Costa. I think what the great item about Senate Bill 595 is that 95% of the representatives who represent the Bay Area have signed off on this package. Everyone had to sacrifice. I'll give you an example. I represent the North Bay Area. We gave up $100 million to be able to give to Contra Costa County. The South Bay did as well. And it's about collaboration and making sure that we're not making the mistakes that previous lawmakers have done and not invest in expanding the capacity of both our state highway and bridge system, as well as public transit. And I think if folks take a look at this list, is targeting those commutes that give Bay Area commuters the most significant indigestion. And it also will help alleviate traffic on our state highways by making public transit, whether it's Muni, BART, SMART, AC Transit, VTA in the South Bay, it will expand capacity to be able to take additional commuters onto their systems.
So what's the brass tacks here? What are we looking at in terms of our bridge toll fee? How much is it going to be going up?
Great question. So process-wise, we need the governor to sign it. The bill is currently on his desk now. He has until October 15th to sign the bill. Number two, we're looking at either June or November of 2018 that this measure will be put onto the ballot, and voters in the Bay Area have to approve it. The reason why we did the expenditure plan is so that voters see what their hard-earned tax dollars, their toll dollars, are going to be spent on. Then what will happen is if voters make a decision to be able to support up to $3 in a toll increase, we'll see each dollar is worth about $135 million a year. The Metropolitan Transportation Commission will bond against that toll revenue to be able to put the $4 billion on the street and start working in our communities. So the earliest that we would see these toll dollars put to work will most likely be in mid-2019 or early 2020. I think the bottom line is this. We have waited too long to be able to expand our highway infrastructure system and public transit. If we take a look at what folks are saying across the Bay Area, housing prices are outrageous and we're at a crisis point, and their commutes are getting worse. We're playing catch-up, unfortunately. This will go a long way to be able to tackle some of the worst commutes in the Bay and to be able to expand the capacity of public transit to end our reliance on the automobile or at least provide more efficient and effective public transit. And I think the other item, Quina, is
yes.
We also are putting in a citizens oversight committee. So citizens across the Bay are able to see how their dollars are being spent. And we have an inspector general position that many have been wanting at BART for a long time that will also be put in place to be able to oversee those operations and expenditures on the BART side.
Well, thank you so much. There's a lot to unpack there, but I know you got to go. We're going to do that in the rest of the show. But I wanted to say thank you to you, California Senator Mike McGuire. Thanks for taking the time to tell us about this bill.
Queen A. Dan, have a great day. Thank you so much.
Great. So joining us now on the line is Timothy Grayson. He is a California Assembly member for District 14, which includes Concord and Walnut Creek. Assembly member Grayson, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
It's a delight to be here with you.
So I am going to ask you really quick, I guess, in a minute, and then we'll get back to you because we got to take a break. But you've been listening to what this, Senator McGuire has been saying. Just a quick rebuttal, and then we'll drill into the sort of specifics of your argument.
Well, I look forward to drilling into the specifics, but I just want to start out by saying that the efforts of my colleagues throughout the Bay Area are to be commended for paying attention to the needs for infrastructure and transportation. We definitely have commutes that are intolerable, and housing is going up. So I applaud their efforts to address the issue. I do believe there are some fatal flaws, and I enjoy the opportunity to be able to talk with him when we come back from break.
And we are talking to Tim Grayson, California Assembly member for District 14, and we also have in the studio right now Dan Brecke, editor and reporter for KQED News. As I've just said, we're about to go on a break, but what are your first reactions before we start opening up the lines and sort of drilling in?
Well, what I said when I wrote about this last week is people are going to be hearing a lot about SB 595. They'll actually hear about it as Regional Measure 3. There will be a battle about this because it's a lot of money. It's in the billions, and people, it's very direct. People may be spending $3 a trip more for their bridge tolls. So this is a visceral transportation issue.
And I didn't realize, Assemblyman Grayson, that you had to leave in a little bit. So I guess maybe let's just drill in really quickly. In an op-ed piece you wrote for the East Bay Times, you make this argument that while the residents of Contra Costa and Solano make up about 20% of the Bay Area, they're going to pay 32% of the overall bridge tolls, the hike in it. By contrast, Santa Clara County will pay just 2% of the bridge tolls, even though they make 25% of the area's population. So I guess my question is, do the citizens of Contra Costa and Solano counties get more because they're paying more?
Well, if we wanted to talk about expenditures, that would be one thing. But if we go back to the collection of revenues, right from the onset, it's fundamentally inequitable as far as a plan. We travel the furthest. We cross the bridges. We make up the most as far as contribution. And so for me, the inequity is in the collection of the revenue. I appreciate and applaud the efforts of how we want to distribute the revenue. But when it comes to the fact that we as an underserved community, we have the lowest and median salaries. We travel the furthest and we'll pay the most for projects that take place in Santa Clara County and also San Francisco County that have nothing to do with us.
So is your feeling that a disproportionate amount of these funds is going to Santa Clara County and not enough to the folks who are actually paying for these toll hikes?
Well, it was stated that this was a return to source revenue bill, and that's a really stretch because I'm finding it not to be the case. If we were really going to do a return to source as far as revenue, the figures would look a lot different. But really what I wanted to focus on was the fact that the collection of revenue, this is going to cost someone in Solano County, coming from an underserved community that travels across two bridges, who now has to pay increase in two bridge tolls to get into San Francisco to hold a livable wage job, who lives check to check, an increase of $1,100 a year, taking their total tolls to about $4,000 a year.
In terms of the difference in bridge use between Contra Costa and Solano counties, we know that you'd mentioned that people in Santa Clara County don't use the bridge as much. I guess I'm wondering why that is. Are they using public transportation more, or have they just done better planning in terms of placing jobs near homes? And is there an argument to be made that maybe they should be rewarded for these making these efforts?
Not exactly. It's because when you live in Santa Clara, you don't have to cross over water to get into San Francisco.
And that's just the bottom line. They're not traveling in their cars any less, or?
No, not at all. I mean, they're just, the fact is there's no bridge to cross, but they're benefiting from a bridge toll. So I'm really challenged at trying to find the nexus between a bridge toll increase to fund projects for a community that doesn't cross the bridge.
Well, thank you, Assemblyman Tim Grayson, for taking the time to speak to us. We are going to continue this conversation with our very own Dan Breke here. Stay with us after the break. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Queenie Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny. We are discussing a $4.4 billion Bay Area transportation plan that would raise bridge tolls and also use that money to expand the BART transportation fleet as well as other infrastructure, transportation infrastructure needs. We are going to open up the phone lines here, so if you have any questions about this plan or how it might affect you, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email your questions to forum@kqed.org or post them on kqed.org/forum. And I should have mentioned that we have in the studio with us Dan Breke. He's the editor and reporter of KQED News. Dan, I'm curious.
I'm one of them anyway.
I guess I wanted to first find out, so this is a bill that passed. It's going to be signed by the governor, but it still has to go up for a vote. Why is that?
Well, this is, I mean, going back into the history a little bit, yes, the legislature passed this last week in its last-minute rush to get everything done, and it's on the governor's desk. I think the backers of this expect the governor to sign it. What it does is actually create the opportunity for the nine Bay Area counties to vote. And the way things have been set up under state law, the voters actually have a say in raising the bridge tolls. This would be the third regional measure going back to 1988. They've been used before to do the a seismic retrofit project on the Bay Area's bridges, and then to fund other projects that people are familiar with. For instance, the fourth bore of the Caldecott Tunnel over there in Oakland, between Oakland and Orinda, and E-BART, the new BART service that's going to go from Pittsburgh Bay Point out to Antioch next year. It's almost ready to roll. So this is following on that. And the further piece of context is that this $4.4 billion seems to come from nowhere in a way, but it's really part of a huge unfunded infrastructure bill that the entire region is facing that's in the tens of billions of dollars. I believe the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, which sort of quarterbacked this regional Measure 3 and will administer it, I think estimated our regional shortfall for transportation and infrastructure funding at something north of $50 billion last year. I mean, this goes out, for the next 20, 25 years. So this is part of that payment.
We just spoke to Timothy Grayson. He was mentioning that he feels, he's assemblyman, he feels that folks in Solano County and Contra Costa County will be paying an unfair burden. He mentioned that many of them are lower wage workers. We know that part of this transportation problem is because there's not enough housing near these jobs. Therefore, people are moving far away to these areas that are creating housing. Is there a case to be made that they're being dinged for being the place with housing that's so far away? Whereas, we've heard a lot about other cities, San Francisco, Palo Alto, that have very restrictive housing rules. And, they're sort of, I guess from his argument, getting away with not sort of almost being rewarded.
Well, that's a big, big question. I mean, sprawl is a great California and a great American tradition. Ever since World War II, we've been building big suburbs, brand new cities, actually, far apart from central cities, and setting up a system where the main way people get back and forth is by driving. And the Bay Area, of course, is no exception to that historic American and California rule. I would just say that the legislature also is trying to tackle the housing problem. They also passed a pretty ambitious set of housing bills that also need to be signed by the governor. The truth is, with so many people coming into the state and continuing to come into the state, one of the speakers before talked about playing catch up. We're going to be playing catch up on all these things, housing included. And I don't think you can look at any of these things in isolation. Just because there may be some unfairness built into the bridge toll structure doesn't mean that we can ignore that piece of it. And I will say beyond that that analysis of the fairness about how much people are paying comes from the Contra Costa County Transportation Authority, and the East Bay Times has been writing about this too, where I think the people in the East Bay, it's Alameda County too, are paying proportionately more for the share of tolls that they pay that they're going to get back in benefits. I do think that's just looking at things at sort of a raw dollar perspective, and it's not really realistic to say, well, BART is going to spend $50 million to explore building a second tube, and that's not a benefit to Contra Costa County. It very much is.
Well, we've got a lot of comments on this issue, so I'm going to start reading some of them. William writes, This is a huge tax on the working class that makes San Francisco what it is. You can't bring all your tools, ladders, and equipment on art. This is coming from a guy that's taken the ladder on munis on many occasions. I guess it was a little confused, but this is something I've actually been thinking about. You know, I worked the morning shift here for many years, and there's really no way for me to get here except for in a car driving across the bridge. And I do notice there's a lot of construction workers, a lot of working class folks, it seems, crossing that bridge every day. They can't take their ladders on the bar. They can't take, you know, their construction equipment. Is there a case to be made that, this does disproportionately, like, not everybody can take the BART, especially folks who don't live near a BART station?
Well, this does hit drivers whatever time of day you drive across the bridges. I mean, there's no question about that. And, you know, I talked to Congressman Mark DeSaulnier's office last week, and he describes this as a regressive tax, in the same way that a sales tax would mm-hmm. be regressive. And I think there is something to that. The issue that you have to grapple with is, if you don't fund it this way, what other way are you going to propose? And I think that's, you know, that's something that's out there to explore. I mean, there are bond measures. A lot of BART voters just passed a big bond measure last year. There are taxes. There aren't too many other ways to go on this. Users pay for the facilities they use.
So we've got a call here from Katie in Novato. Katie, welcome to Forum.
Hi. So I live in Novato, and I commute to San Leandro every day. I have for 20 years. I pay $1,300 a year in bridge tolls. I have no mass transit options. I have no choice but to take the bridge. And I think it's ridiculous that we keep having the bridge tolls pay for everything else. Bridge tolls should only pay for bridge maintenance. BART should pay for BART. And general infrastructure should come from general revenue from the state. It shouldn't be subsidized just by the bridge commuters.
Well, I have to say, looking at this long list of stuff you included in your blog post that really drills into every aspect of this bill, I mean, this bridge toll is going to pay for everything from bike trails to BART. The other question I have is, didn't we just vote on something for BART to give them more money?
Well, I just mentioned that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, BART's playing catch up with maintenance too. And it needs a brand new fleet of cars. And it's at record ridership levels, although those have dropped a little bit recently.
So why not just raise the BART toll for folks who pay for the upgrades for BART.
I don't want to say we have, because I'm not on the BART board, but no, BART has raised fares, and its voters did agree by a two-thirds majority in the three BART counties to tax themselves, essentially, so the district can borrow $3.5 billion for infrastructure problems. But, you know, I don't want to fall into the position of having to defend Regional Measure 3. I think the call we just heard from Novato is exactly the issue that's going to be argued. And I would say something to keep in mind. This Regional Measure 3 will only need a simple majority to pass. It doesn't have a two-thirds threshold to meet.
Well, let's get through some more calls. We have Kelly from Contra Costa County on the line. Kelly, welcome to Forum.
Hi. I was just wondering if your guests could clarify whether this affects toll roads, like the ones that go over the snow grade on 680 and areas like that, if there'd be an increase in those rates as well.
You know, there's a separate process for adjusting the tolls on those hot lanes, those express lanes. So it would not directly affect that. The way it will affect things is that part of the money that would be raised as part of this bridge toll increase would go to building new express lanes, you know, paid HOV lanes, or however you think of it, in Contra Costa and Alameda County, as well as Santa Clara County.
We have a listener comment. Mimi writes, "It seems like every time tolls and fares get hiked, very little of it results in efforts that improve our commute experience in meaningful ways. I want to see a breakdown of how both BART and the Bay Area bridge tolls are currently allocated before I cast a vote." Any insight into that?
Yeah, well, you know, there's the BART budget you can look at. And I'm not being facetious when I say that. People really ought to be more familiar with how BART's spending its money. I mean, that's an agency that's got a $1.8 billion budget, and it's roughly evenly split at this point between operations, which are the things that keep it running every day, everything from employee salaries to paying for keeping the lights on. And the rest of it is capital funding to help, keep the system, in good shape and buy new cars and that kind of thing. In terms of the allocation of the bridge tolls, that's handled by something called the Bay Area Toll Authority. And, you know, I wish I could point you to an exact place to check that out. If you Google Bay Area Toll Authority and look for their finance pages, I think you would get some insight there.
That skepticism we heard in that comment, in that listener comment, is also reflected by some members of our state legislature. So there is a provision in this bill, if I'm correct, to sort of have a general inspector for BART. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Senator Steve Glaser, former mayor of Orinda, who was elected to the state legislature basically on a campaign to try to prohibit future BART strikes, he and many, many other people in the Bay Area were very upset with the 2013 strikes, and he wants to stop them. He's still working on that. But he did get a provision built in that will create the position of a BART inspector general. The bill would provide $1 million in the first year of the BART inspector general, and then after that, we don't know how it would be funded. And the position is kind of vague, but it would potentially have a very sweeping scope to it in terms of overseeing BART's finances and BART's operations, even its performance. And so there has been noise from the BART board that people aren't completely happy with that. And it also goes along with BART board member Deborah Allen, who represents Contra Costa County, has proposed having a BART auditor. So this might dovetail with her plan.
If you're just joining us on Forum, we are discussing a $4.4 billion Bay Area transportation plan that would raise bridge tolls to pay for things like expanded BART fleet, as well as exploration of more bike trails, Dumbarton Bridge corridor work, many things. We are talking to Dan Brecke. He's the editor and reporter for KQED News, and he follows transportation here for us. But let's go to a couple more calls here. We've got Fran in Emeryville. Fran, welcome to Forum.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I strongly believe that as it's currently constituted, BART should not receive more funds. BART needs more members from the public on its board, and that it must demonstrate that it can be more responsive before it receives more money. More money is not the answer for BART, which is a totally dysfunctional management system. That's my comment.
I think I'm just going to let that one stand there, and I'm going to go to the next call, and that's going to be Jeff from Fremont. Fremont, Jeff, go ahead.
Hi. If you look at this travel problem, it's largely exacerbated by the fact that people are commuting to and from work. And this despite the fact that for many of the knowledge workers that work in the Bay Area, they can just as easily do the work from home and stay off the roads completely and leave the roads available for the people whose nature of their jobs really require them to go to work. I don't understand why local businesses don't lean a little bit, local governments don't lean a little bit on some of these businesses to encourage them to enable telecommuting. This would cut down our carbon footprints. It would save a bunch of money in road construction that you wouldn't had to do, and frankly make the quality of life of all the people who don't have to drive 2 hours a day on these roads much, much better.
I know you don't cover workplace issues here, Dan, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that. Would that be enough to lessen the problems, more people working from home?
Well, it makes sense, and I like Jeff's thinking. It's tricky for governments to get into the business of trying to tell private enterprise what to do, but, you know, you could have a program of incentives, and I believe there are some incentives. For instance, for encouraging commuting by transit. You know, one surprising thing, MTC, Metropolitan Transportation Commission, came out with its latest statistics on congestion in the Bay Area a couple days ago. And one of their historical statistics is how many people are telecommuting, working from home. And I think back in the 90s, it was about 1% of the workforce in the early 90s. It wasn't easy to do then. Surprisingly to me, it's only up to about 6% now. I would expect that to be higher, given all the factors that Jeff just mentioned. Anyway, it makes sense, and especially when you consider that 65% of all of us who are driving to work are driving solo. So that is one of the big factors in congestion.
We have a comment here. We got a call here from Ray from Sunnyvale. Ray, welcome to this forum.
So I'm looking at this list, and I approve it. I love the idea. But we've got 45-plus transit agencies running, 45 government agencies running our transit projects. And some of these are merely wish lists. I mean, I ride DTA occasionally, and I still see it empty, which is an inefficient project.
Hey, Ray, I'm going to cut you off here because your line is really difficult to hear. But what I'm hearing is he supports the measure, but he is afraid that it's just going to fund more inefficiency, which seems to be the general skepticism of a lot of the folks who are calling in.
Well, historically, I mean, he was bringing up the issue of how fragmented the Bay Area transportation picture is. And that's definitely true. I don't know that anybody has really proposed anything that would, concentrate all of these or, bring all of our, many, many transit systems together. There are many reasons why they stay apart. A lot of them are because of political jurisdictions and just plain history and tradition. But that is an issue. And this is another thing that Representative DeSaulnier said. He feels that other parts of the country, and he pointed to Seattle and Portland, for instance, do a better job in terms of their regional transportation planning because there's less politics involved. And that's one of his major complaints with this process.
We've got a ton of comments coming in, so I'm just going to read through some of them. Here's Kevin, and he writes, housing prices are outrageous. Every person I know is stretched to their financial limit. No one disagrees that these projects would be important, but Bay Area residents are already being ground into deep levels of poverty as it is. We have another comment from Richard, and he writes, asking the question about which counties pay more in bridge tolls is just feeding the flames of localism. Our Bay Area suffers from this attitude already. Please focus on regional solutions. And let me read one more. This is Paul, and he writes, here's an idea. Why don't we use some of the tax money raised from our almost $1.70 a gallon state gas tax to fund California's transportation needs? Or how about California dedicate some of the state budget towards transportation like we used to? Well, that's another bag of worms right there.
Well, we do actually spend gas tax money on transportation. There's a fiction brought out there that it was all diverted. That's not true. And the state does spend a substantial amount of money. And and this is another part of the context. The SB1, which also passed in this session earlier in the year, is going to raise $5 billion a year in a variety of use taxes, gasoline, diesel, and other taxes, to fund big transportation infrastructure projects over the next decade.
We've got Julia on the line. It says she's on the Bay Bridge. Hey, Julia, welcome to Forum. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I've just observed, for example, like Google, Facebook, Genentech, they all have these buses that pick up their employees and drive them to work. So none of their employees will have to pay an increase in bridge tolls. And I'm just curious, how do these companies contribute to our infrastructure? Is there a way that these companies that are pulling so many people in here could be better contributors instead of it falling onto the working class? And I can take that question offline.
Well, it's tempting to say that a company like Apple, which has a an incredible amount of money, supposedly in cash, could just pay for some of these projects as chump change, right? They wouldn't even miss it, you know, build a new BART extension. You know, as things stand, they contribute through the same corporate tax structure and same tax structure, that all businesses and all the rest of us do. You know, Facebook, I mean, there have been some efforts around the margins. For instance, Facebook paid for $1 million plus for a study of whether you could get the Dumbarton Bridge operating as a train corridor again.
You are listening to Forum. We are talking to Dan Brecke. He's a news editor here at KQED. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Queen Akim. So if you're just joining us, we are discussing a $4.4 billion Bay Area transportation plan. It's a bill that passed both houses of the legislature. The governor is expected to sign it. Once it gets signed, the voters will decide whether to vote for the toll or not. And let's go to some questions here. We got Serena from Palo Alto. Hey, Serena.
Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate the efforts being taken to improve the infrastructure for the traffic, and there is a lot of traffic congestion all around the Bay Area. But when we look at the traffic trends, the main traffic congestion would be either on 101 or 280, Interstate 101 or Interstate 280. So how would increasing the tolls benefit the congestion on these interstates? And having a lack of ideas to improve the infrastructure, are we penalizing the people who are taking these toll roads?
The bill that, or the Regional Measure 3, which will go before voters, does include a proposal for a new, for extra lanes on 101, which is, between Mountain View and downtown San Jose, particularly, that's a choke point every single day. It's been, one of the top five worst congested places in the Bay Area for years. I'm not familiar with what improvements are in store for 280, what they would be. I can say that there's about $1.1 billion in highway projects, mostly interchange improvements. Those are a place where there's a lot of pain throughout the Bay Area.
I'm going to go through some more of these comments. Steve writes, BART has promised to voters that it's going to be 100% farebox funded. If you want to close the gap, keep that promise and raise ticket prices to fully fund the system, simple. We have another comment from Mike, and he asks, it just seems wrong to make East Bay residents pay higher tolls to make Peninsula resident commutes better by extending Caltrain. And we have a third comment here by Harrison, and he writes, it seems like this will have a negative impact on lower income workers who have been pushed to the outer far East Bay. If there were a fast, reliable public transportation option to avoid driving across the bridge, I'd take it. But unfortunately, the Bay Area has been slow to keep up with its exploding population. Well, let's go to listener call here. We have Will in San Francisco. Will, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thanks. I'll just make a comment. I own a construction company. I put 250 miles a day on my truck. Every employee I have does not live in San Francisco, but we all work in San Francisco because that's where the money is. Increasing bridge tolls is egregious. You know, the condition of our roads and the obvious, lack of organization and the inability to select decent contractors to do the work is not really our fault. So it would be really great if we could find better solutions than constantly raising tolls, which already are some of the highest in the nation. I personally pay thousands of dollars in tolls, and I am not seeing that money is going to any good use. It's definitely not going to keep up the roads in the San Francisco city and county. That is for sure. That's the only comment I have. Have a great day.
You know, it strikes me that we're hearing a lot of outrage, a lot from East Bay residents who have to commute a lot. And Tim Grayson, he was the assembly member we just had on the line, was saying maybe this won't matter because the way that this was crafted, in his opinion, the politics of it is that a small number of people will be impacted, a larger number of people will benefit, and therefore that larger number of voters will win. Is that
well? That's the electoral arithmetic. That's an accurate assessment of the electoral arithmetic. I mean, Contra Costa County and Alameda County, or in Solano County, even if they all got together in a wave of outrage, probably wouldn't be able to defeat this. On the other hand, you know, I do think people are listening. One provision in this bill is it's not written in stone that it's going to be a $3 toll increase. The Bay Area Toll Authority and the MTC could decide to put something less. Now, if they do, then the funding for all these projects will be proportionately less.
I had a list here of a bunch of there was a study that came out talking about the worst traffic points in the Bay, and one of them was westbound Interstate 80 from Highway 4 through Berkeley and across the Bay Bridge. And I guess this is one of those places at all times there's really bad traffic. What's in this transportation plan that might help alleviate that portion of the pain?
You know, I don't think there's anything specific in that package except for instance, improvements to BART that may take cars off the road. I may be missing something there. But, I mean, you're right that this is a perennial bad spot. It's been in the top 10 for more than a decade. And, you know, there have been measures taken. There's a smart corridor project to try to control the flow of traffic down there. I think the jury is still out about whether that's been effective or not.
Well, that's it for this hour of Forum. We've been talking to Dan Brecke. He's the editor and reporter for KQED News. We spoke earlier to Timothy Grayson. He's a California Assembly member for the District 14. And Mike McGuire, California State Senator for District 2. I'm Queenie Kim, and thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.